Well, welcome to the Well-Rounded Leaders Podcast. I am your host, Tony Davis, coming to you from the beautiful beaches in Jacksonville, Florida. First of all, I want to start off by just asking you to do me a favor. If you get something out of the podcast, if you enjoy the episodes, if you enjoy my guests, please go to Apple Podcasts and please rate the show 5 stars. And if you would, leave a review. And I thank you for listening. I thank you for supporting the show and helping the show grow every single week. I love the quote, and I always start off this way, from Bo Schembechler, legendary head football coach at the University of Michigan. Every day you get better or you get worse. You never stay the same. So my hope for you listening today is that you take away something from today's leadership conversation that makes you better and helps you grow in your leadership. We should all be striving to improve ourselves every single day, whether it's physically, mentally, spiritually, socially, emotionally. Making ourselves better, just 1% better every day, will absolutely grow you and make you better throughout the course of your life. That's the beginning of self-leadership, and it's what it means to be a well-rounded leader. And if you want more information about the show, about our sponsor, Arrowhead Leadership, which is a licensee of Crescom, go to the Well-Rounded Leaders website at wellroundedleaders.com. And Arrowhead Leadership is an authorized licensee of Crescom International that works with local companies, help developing their leaders and making their management teams more effective leaders, and thereby seeing positive business impact. My guest today is Billie Tucker Volpe. She is the founder and CEO of the CEO Service Bureau, and she's been working with leaders and CEOs for many years. She's also the founder of the Leaderboard Roundtable and the Speaker Bureau. And we have a very good conversation getting into the minds of today's CEO and talking about some of the things that she has learned from her childhood all the way up through working with CEOs. It's an outstanding conversation. She is so insightful. And I know you're going to enjoy this episode. So ladies and gentlemen, enjoy the episode. Billie Tucker Volpe. Well, welcome to the Well-Rounded Leaders Podcast. I am here today with Billie Tucker Volpe. She is the CEO Service Bureau founder, and she works with CEOs, and she deals with all of the different idiosyncrasies that goes on with having to coach and train and develop people at the highest positions of authority within an organization. Billie, welcome to the podcast. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you, Tony. This is fun.
Yes.
You said to train CEOs. I was like, I don't know so much about that.
Well, maybe not train them. No, you can't train them.
You can't
train
a CEO.
No, that's true. That's true. You only can...
I can sort of nudge them, okay, into areas that probably they should look at themselves, but...
And then make them feel like they figured it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's what we have to do with everybody in life, as a matter of fact.
It's relationships.
If we're coaching and we're being the best possible coach for those that we lead... It's not about telling, but as you say, it's about nudging, but asking the right questions and helping them find the solutions on their own. And that's where the development process really.
Exactly. You know, when people find out something on their own, they buy into it versus somebody trying to tell them, you need to change here, you need to do that. You know, the first thing is to put up a wall and to resist. And CEOs are no different. It's just human nature. So it's relationship building when you think about it. You know, you're married. I'm married. You know, the worst thing we can do is say, you need to change to that person, because the minute you do that, what happens?
They're like, right.
So, you know, you want to love them and encourage them and support what they're doing. And, yeah, every now and then nudge them. You know, how can I help you? That kind of thing. And really, that's the approach I take when I work with CEOs. CEOs are some of the loneliest people in the world, you know. And I used to run an organization for almost 20 years called Vistage. And their motto used to be, because it's lonely at the top. I think they've changed that now. But I always liked that, because CEOs are lonely. And a lot of people that work for them don't understand that. In fact, they roll their eyes and they think, how could they be lonely? Well, the reason that they're lonely is they come to work every day. They've built a business. Like you've built businesses, mm-hmm. Tony, you know, and they've built it, and they, you know, a lot of them put their credit card on the table when they started. And some of them started in their apartments. I've had many of my clients tell me their stories like that. And, you know, then they create this successful business, this successful enterprise. And a lot of people don't know the story. They don't know the history. They don't know the sleepless nights about how am I going to make payroll, you know. And my heart just goes out to them. And I think that's why I've loved my job so much, and I've done it for so long. I started actually doing, working with a CEO, which was my dad, when mm-hmm. I was 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
And I, he started his own little company. He was an air conditioning contractor way back when you could work out of your home. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have cell phones, and we didn't even have a CB radio. We had nothing. And my dad went and got a used vehicle so he could put his equipment in it. And he went out and said, word of mouth told people about, I'm an air conditioning contractor. And this was even before a lot of people had central heat and air. You know, he was doing window mm-hmm. units and stuff. And so anyway, and I'm dating myself, aren't I? Oh, my God. But, you know, life goes fast. And so when my dad did that, he would come home and he would ask me, did I get any calls, you know, because we were using our house phone. Mm-hmm. And I would say yes or no. And if I said yes, I had a little piece of paper that I had to write down. Mr. Smith called. His AC isn't working. Here's his address. Here's his phone number. So my dad would get on the phone. He'd call him, and then he'd run over to look at his AC unit. And that's the first entrepreneur I ever worked with, you know. And he ended up building a business. My brother owns it. My dad's passed away, but we are very proud to say our family's business is 67 years old.
Wow.
And here in Jacksonville. And, you know, we never built it to this huge company, because my dad always just liked the one-on-one connection with people, and my brother's the same way. And so, you know, we've got a few trucks like that on the road, but not, he's just never built it to something that, you know, he could lose connection with the people. We still mm-hmm. have a lot of people from 50 years ago that my brother still services.
Wow.
But it's so funny, because when my dad would come home, he was a single father raising these three kids. I was one of them. And he went to Eckerd's, and Eckerd's was a large drugstore here in Jacksonville in Florida. Mm-hmm. And he got a little dome accounting book, and that dome accounting book had debits and credits. Mm-hmm. So every day he would come home and hand me these little receipts. He'd go over the Matthews Bridge, and he'd get a receipt for 10 cent, you know, 20 cent when they went up on the, what do you call it? The toll.
The tolls.
So I would put that little 10 cent in there, you know, and I have the little receipts. And so I literally learned accounting doing that for my dad.
And how old are you?
I was 10.
Wow.
I was 10 doing that.
Talk about life lessons right there.
I know. Well, you know, I had no idea. I was angry sometimes that I was working at 10. But my dad, like I said, was a single father, and we had to do that. I mean, that was, we wanted to eat. We wanted to survive. And so that's why I say I have a heart for entrepreneurs. I have a heart for these people that have built a business, because when I get around them, I see my dad and so many of them, and I see some of them have really, gosh, they've done so well. I mean, Tony, I can't tell you how many of them have sold their companies and became millionaires, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just, I literally want to cry because I'm so happy for them. And mm-hmm. Some people are like, you know, well, the people that work for them a lot of times don't feel that. They don't have that empathy mm-hmm. for them, because, you know, we all have our own lives. But that's been a blessing for me to be able to work with these kind of people. And they're all out there. That's America.
That is America right there. That is, yep, that's the American dream
mm-hmm.
as we used to know it, and hopefully still will in the future. But that's a whole other topic for another conversation.
Yeah, the day after the State of the Union address, we won't go there.
Exactly. But you brought up something else too, is about why it is so lonely at the CEO level, is that, you know, yeah, sure, there's blood, sweat, tears, sleepless nights. And then, of course, their investments, their time, energy, and lifestyle and quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's you brought up the empathy of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
And there really isn't, you
not
know,
much.
Regardless, you know, and regardless of, and it, you know, a lot of that has to do really with the type of leader that CEO is too.
That's true.
But, you know, there's that feeling that all the decisions that you make are going to isolate some of your employees or not some, or mm-hmm. other employees. And you always struggle, and I'm speaking from experience, mm-hmm. with, am I doing the right thing? I've got to do the right thing by way of the business, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I also want to do right by the employee.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know, and part of that struggle is, you have to make tough decisions sometimes.
It's a balance.
And there is a balance, and you have to walk that fine line of running a business, mm-hmm. but also taking care of your people. And there's a lot of gray area with that.
Well, I've seen it all. Mm-hmm. I've worked with a lot of people, and I've seen CEOs that took care of the people, and it affected their business drastically. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that and you say, well, okay, is that good or bad? Because there is a time where you have to cut off things, you know, make those tough decisions like you're saying. I've also seen CEOs that it was all about the business and not about the people. And for me, that was always the hardest one. I didn't really like that style because I felt like they weren't in it. They were in it for themselves.
Right.
Right. So I remember one day there was a local engineering firm I worked with. And this was back in 2008 when everything was crashing in. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
I do.
And I'd been working with him for a couple of years, and I walked into his office one day, and he looked shook. He was shook up. And he got up and closed the door behind me, and, you know, he went behind his desk, and he looked at me, and he literally had tears. And I said, what's up? Like, oh, my gosh, somebody die? And he said, we've just gotten out of a meeting, and Billy, I'm going to have to lay off half my staff. This was in 2008.
Mm-hmm. I remember 2008 vividly.
It was terrible. And he was so upset. And he was upset because these were people that he knew. They were friends. They were, yeah, he knew that because of his business that they could buy a new house. Mm-hmm. They could send their kids to college. They could, take their kids on vacation. He knew their children, you know. It was a big family to him, and it really affected him. And somehow or another, they got through it. They did lay off a bunch of people, and it tore him up, you know. And, of course, the people that got laid off, I'm sure, didn't feel that they cared about him. But it was a business decision. If they had not done that, they would not have survived for the rest of the people. They ended up surviving him, and he eventually sold that business. Didn't make as much money as he had wanted to, but he's, you know, he did the right thing. He kept the business going, and he was rewarded himself for that. You know, you hear all these stories about great CEOs that, you know, like Chick-fil-A and how they treat their people, and, you know, they're closed on Sundays. They have these certain values and all of that. And you usually end up winning if you put the people first. And if you put profit over people, you usually don't. But at some point, you do have to go to that line and make a decision. And it's tough. Mm-hmm. That's why I love them. I love these guys and women. I've got women CEOs, too, that have made those really tough decisions. But I wish people, you know, there's a movement across the country to hate people that are in business. Mm-hmm. They think they're, you know, I built that. Well, no, you really didn't. The CEO built that. That was their vision. That was their idea. And they hired you. They paid you. So, you know, I've seen a lot over the past few years where they've really, attacked the people that I love. And I think America was built on those kind of people. So I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's harder to be a CEO nowadays, mm-hmm. you know, because like you said earlier, you've got these people now that, you know, in a company, you better get woke on this issue. Excuse me, I had to cough. Get woke on this issue or we're going to, you know, leave or, you know, we're going to attack you in some way. I mean, the whole climate for business is a lot different than it used to be.
Well, it is. It is. It's real different. It's, you know, the workplace is changing faster than it ever has. And one of the things, too, you know, you kind of touched on it a little bit, is that there really is, there's profit. The word profit has been seen to be a four-letter word,
yeah,
you know, now in the media. And you know, and blaming the gas companies and the gas corporations for taking too much profit, mm-hmm. And not, you know, it's just a tough spot to be in. And then you have the element that you referred to is, you know, the new generation, the Gen Z's coming in, and there's a whole, you know, dynamic with some of the social.
Yeah.
The social elements that are being politicized, and then that permeates into the workplace culture too. So it is lonely at the top.
It is lonely at the top having to deal and you know, navigate all these changes constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be in business 30 years and watch all the different changes that take place in the culture, you know. I it's funny, when my son became employed after he graduated, he went to Embry-Riddle, and he lived at home for a year while he saved his money, and he ended up buying a house, and he's just been awesome. You know, he's been rocking it his whole life, doing some really cool stuff. But when he got his first paycheck, you know, he came home one day, that day, and he looked at it, and he says, "Mom, what is this FIC thing? What is that? The FICA, you know, what is that FICA thing, you know?" And so I started explaining it to him, and I was just grinning because he was mad. He goes, "I can't believe they took that much money out of my check, blah, blah, blah," you know. And before that, he was a little bit of a different kind of young man.
Mm-hmm.
But until he had got affected by those policies, you know. And now he is, oh, my gosh, he is so good about this stuff. He can't stand anybody messing with his, you know, his money. He earned that money. He's done what he's done with it. And I think until you're affected, I think this new generation that's coming in, we think, oh, they may be lost. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to take them very long once they start working and they get out there and they realize, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to give money to this woke corporation, but wait a minute, what about me? What about me? So, you know.
Well, and if you look back, you know, the person that we are today and the person that we were in our late teens and 20s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for some people, it's a lot drastic, a larger swing than others. But, you know, obviously I was a different person. You know, why is that? It's called responsibilities.
Right.
You have more responsibilities. You get married. You have a family. Mm-hmm. Bigger picture.
Right.
And you start to see the bigger picture, and you start to understand what the bigger picture means to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts to shape.
Right. We're just growing up. We're all going through the process of growing up. And, you know, listen, a lot's changed since I was a teenager. I was in the hippie movement. I was really a hippie, too. I mean, I loved being a hippie.
Oh, yeah. You know?
Of course, I was cute and tiny, and I wore bell-bottoms and, you know, crop tops and peace and love and all that stuff. It was wonderful to be a hippie. But I had to grow out of it.
And you had no responsibilities,
too. I had none. But, you know, it's funny because I've got I'm going to my 50th class reunion, okay, soon. And there are some people there that have not grown up.
Wow.
And I think about 50 years that I've lived and all the things that I've experienced and the fun I've had growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's more fun to grow up than it is to not grow up, okay? So I think if you stop growing, I have a mentor. His name was Charles Red Scott. And he was the most amazing man, CEO of large public companies. And he told me one day, he said, "Billy, when you're green, you're growing. Mm. When you're ripe, you're rotten. Like a banana."
Like a banana.
Like a banana.
Exactly.
And every time I see a banana rotting, I think about him. I turn it into banana bread, by the way. But as for human beings, you know, I've seen CEOs that I have this one client right now. He's amazing because he's growing. He's 72 years old, and he had this one business. I'll just tell you, he's a toy maker. But just, you know, like 5 years ago, he said, I want to write a book. Sat down and wrote a book, right? And then he said, I've got this song in my head to go along with a book. So he sat down and wrote two country music songs. And now he's looking at a movie. He's all over the place. But he's 72, and he's never stopped growing. He is the most joyful person to be around. I have so much fun with him.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't even describe how cool it is to be with a 72-year-old that's more fun because he's still experiencing life and he's not going to give up and he's still grown. He's still green, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's really cool. So then I've got these, I've got a, you know, a story of a guy that recently took over a business that is highly unqualified to be in this business. But, you know, he had connections to the job, so he ended up getting it. And so here he is running a business, and he has absolutely no no expertise. Mm-hmm. But guess what? He has no joy, and he also doesn't want to listen to anybody, right? Mm. He has no desire to hear what you have to say. He has all the answers. And I know right now people are going to listen to this and say, "Ah, that's my CEO. He's got all the answers, right?" Yeah. And if your CEO does have all the answers, that's sad because, you know, we should always be open to listening and hearing others' opinions.
Sometimes the best leaders don't have all the answers, but they have all the best questions.
They have the best questions, right? Exactly. And if they're willing to you know, ask the questions, if they're willing to listen, that's all that. You know, they don't know everything. Mm. I don't know everything. I know a lot of things, but I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And I love to, you know, to continue to learn myself. So I think that's the biggest thing that, you know, people are listening to this is never stop growing.
Well, and to your example, I mean, there's been a lot of CEOs that have taken over businesses that they really didn't know a whole lot about the industry itself.
Right.
But what they did have was transferable leadership. Mm. And in the example that you just talked about, this CEO is only behind the eight ball, not because he's not all that familiar with the industry, but he chooses to go in there and know it all.
Right.
And that, first of all, his people aren't stupid. They know that he doesn't have much experience within the industry. Mm. So you know, if he would go in there humble, willing to listen, willing to learn from the people that, and my guess is he probably has really good people within the organization for now.
Right. For now.
Maybe not for long.
Well, that's the key there, yeah. Tony. You know, people don't want to work for people like that.
Mm, no.
You know, not in this day and age.
There's
especially.
Too many choices right now. Exactly. There's too many jobs out there.
Right. We want to be respected at work. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's somebody that's been there 20 years, don't you think they have something of knowledge about things, you know, like the front lines, especially and that kind of stuff. And then when people come in and they don't even ask your opinion, boy, that gets picked up pretty quick in an organization, you know, and it shows you the culture is getting ready to dive. Mm. So yeah, you're right. The best thing people can do is, you know, I hate that old adage, but I love it too, is we have two ears, you know, one mouth. Yeah. I mean, and God knew what he was doing.
Yep.
He said, listen more than you speak. And that is for CEOs, and that's for everybody. But if there's a CEO, he needs to be out. He or she needs to be out there listening and saying, what's going on? You know, there's a story about Sam Walton, Walmart. Now, Walmart's not the way it was when Sam built it. But he would go into stores, and he would, you know, he was just a country boy. He'd go in, and he would just ask them, So what's going on here, and how do you handle shipping, and how do you do this? And he was always asking the clerks and the people that did the purchasing and whatever their job was. He wanted to know from them, what's the biggest thing? What's your biggest issue? You know, how can we help you? Blah, blah, blah. People loved him. Sam Walton was loved by the people that worked at Walmart. So much so that you know, he ended up winning the Horatio Alger Award. And I don't know, you know, I haven't heard about Horatio Alger in a long time, but my CEO, Red Scott, was given that award too. The Horatio Alger Award is given to people that come from nothing and build businesses and are loved. Mm. It's pretty cool. I mean, they build these businesses and then they are loved by the people that you know, work for them. And what a great organization. And, you know, some of the people that have won these awards, people just go look it up and see, you know, some of the things that they talk about, the traits that they all had together, which was, you know, you could find it. For me, when I meet a CEO, I can sit down with a CEO and know pretty quick what their leadership style is like and what makes them tick, what ticks them off. And so Horatio Alger came up with these certain traits that they saw in CEOs that were going to be successful. So if people want to be successful, go to the Horatio Alger website and take a look at that.
That's good information. Cool thing. Yeah. And you hear that a lot about, you know, Walt Disney was kind of the same way. Yeah. They talked about, you know, he would walk the streets of the parks and pick mm-hmm. trash up and mm-hmm. and help out as many different ways as he could and be right there.
Yeah.
Right there in the trenches, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, with the people. And then that's kind of where you get the respect. So we talked a little bit about one side of the imposter syndrome, where they come in and they try to show that they know too much and they think mm-hmm. that they are who they aren't. If that made sense. I don't even know if that made sense.
It does. So made sense to me.
So let's look on the flip side. Mm-hmm. How have you ever dealt with a CEO that maybe is a new CEO? Maybe they are thrust into the leadership position mm-hmm. and they lack the confidence, or they don't think that they don't know how to necessarily, where do I start? What am I supposed to, how do I, and just really are trying to feel their way through their leadership and have kind of a negative mm-hmm. self imposter syndrome where they just don't feel they're maybe qualified to be there.
Well, I will be very transparent and tell you that happened in my life at one point. I was probably 30 and had been given the role of running, probably about 32, running Vistage, mm-hmm. Florida. And I figured I knew how to do it because I'd been doing it. But once you get the hat mm-hmm. that goes along with it, then you're like, oh, now I've got to really do it. And so I became a member of a Vistage group. I flew to Atlanta every month, and my CEO, Red, said, you should go there. That gives you a forum where you can talk about, you know, your help, the help that you need as a leader and all of that stuff. And it's not here in Florida. So every month I'd go to Atlanta, and I was a part of this group. And I remember flying to Atlanta the first morning that I was going to go to that meeting. And in my head, I was thinking, by the end of the day, they're going to call Red and tell him, she doesn't belong here. Why is she here? You know, she's not qualified to be in this group with other CEOs. And so I had that fear that I didn't belong there, right? But that fear went away once I got into that group. One of the things I did, and I was coached on that, was what I've been saying here. I listened more than I spoke, because by listening, I built my confidence up. If I spoke too much, I was trying to prove that I belonged at the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
the imposter,
right? Trying to prove I belong here. Yeah, you know. But I was given, and Red gave me that. He said, just do a lot of listening, and then if they ask you a question, you know, give them what you think, and Billy, you're smart, you can do this, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, you know, he believed in me before I did. And so as the years went on, I spoke up more, of course, mm-hmm. because I ended up getting more confident in what I did. But in the initial stages, I think these people that have the low confidence and they've been given this job, they need to sit down and listen. They will grow. But they, you know, one of the things I did too, it was a trick, but it worked. Just act like you're taking notes, you know? Have a notepad there, because people then are curious, I wonder what she's writing down over there, you know? And some stuff I was writing down that was really important.
Other grocery
stuff
list.
Right. I was like, okay, Billy, just be confident, be confident. But so that was a trick that somebody had given me. I'm giving away my tricks here. I don't do that anymore because I'm pretty confident. But
you don't have to. You're past the pretend you're writing down notes stage.
Right. But, you know, it's a trick. And do whatever you got to do. Yeah. They said fake it till you make it. So I did that. And when I first started working for Vistage, the guy that owned it, he was not a very good communicator. He wasn't. And I've told him that to his face. So if he hears this, he'll laugh. He'll say, yep, she did. But
I'm sure he's a listener.
I'm sure he is, because he's all about leadership. But anyway, he said, my very first project working with him, I was just going to do this project first, and then ended up working with him for years. And he's telling me, rattling off all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm just writing down, like, okay. And I don't want to ask too many questions because I don't want to look dumb. right?
That's a common flaw in the workplace.
Right. I don't want to look dumb.
No.
So I'm just writing out, okay. And then he leaves and goes away for 2 days on a trip. This is the best story. It's so embarrassing. But I was really young.
Yeah.
And so I'm digging in the trash can because he had taken these little post-it notes. And as he was telling me stuff, right, and I'm writing down, he would take that post-it note and throw it in the trash. So he leaves to go, I'm digging through the trash, pulling out the post-it notes, trying to figure out what the heck he was wanting me to do, you know? And I'm looking around the office like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? How do I do this? How do I do this? So it was really hard because I was trying to prove that I was smart to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he came back, I got some of it right and I got some of it wrong, right? And the ones that I got wrong, it was just, I hate, even to this day, I'm 68 years old, even to this day, I don't like to do something wrong, right? I hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate it so much. And it just makes this feeling inside of me like, ugh. But it's better now what my response will be like, oh, dang it. I can't believe I did that wrong. I am so sorry. And, you know, let me fix that. I can't believe it. You know, just and move on. People love that. But when you sit there and you try to make excuses, well, you didn't tell me and I didn't understand and it's your fault because, you know, if somebody doesn't understand something, it's because you didn't explain it well.
Yeah.
Excuses and whininess never make it in the business world.
No.
But again, I can speak to experience because I've done all of this, okay? I've mm-hmm. done it all, and I know what it feels like. But the best thing to do is to listen and ask a lot of questions, really, mm-hmm. in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, confidence is really, it's a mindset, mm-hmm. you know, because you can have experience and still go into a situation and not be confident, or you could have no experience at all, but go in as confident. I mean, think about kids. You know, if kids are playing a sport for the first time, well, most of them aren't going to be real confident. But there's going to be the other half that are going to go into it just ready to go. And right. having this authentic sense of confidence and power and just know that they're going to, you know, they've wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. They've been passionate. I've wanted to play soccer all my life. I can't wait. This is my first day. I'm going to soccer. And they just have this unbridled enthusiasm. And this immovable confidence, mm-hmm. but they have no experience.
None.
So at the end of the day, you know, confidence is really up to you. And
the people around you. I mean, if I can say this,
go ahead,
Tony,
yeah.
Because I think you're right. If I hadn't had good people around me my whole life telling me I could do things like my dad, you know, he was, like I said, a single father. I didn't have a mom. You know, I think about how incompetent he felt trying to be both to me. But the one thing he kept saying is, Billy, you can do anything you want to, honey. I mean, you just got to work hard. You know, those were the traits back then of life. Never give up, you know, keep going. Don't let these people, you know, hold you back, blah, blah, blah. And then I had good mentors around me, like Red Scott, you know. He taught me so much about business and you know, how to be a business person. And so having those people around you, I think, are important. And if you don't have good people around you, go find them. Go find a mentor, somebody that will believe in you, you know. If you've got parents or a family unit that's not mm-hmm. supportive of what you're doing and you still want to do it, go find those people that will say, I'll help you. I've seen CEOs, big, you know, CEOs that are clients of mine, go out and find mentors. CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like, oh, you know, I need a mentor. I need somebody that's been there, done that. And, you know, they're still people, you know, even though they're successful, they still have their own little imposter thing going on too.
That's right. I mean, self-doubt, you know, there isn't a person on the planet that doesn't at some point have an experience self-doubt mm-hmm. at some level.
Mm-hmm.
It's human nature.
Right.
It doesn't matter what, you know, what we try to do. There could be an element of self-doubt. So you have to have that support system, you know, mm-hmm. and going back to the kid analogy, you're right. The parents of the half that go in there fully confident, they don't say, Hey, son, daughter, you need to chill out a little bit. You've never played soccer before. Okay.
No,
you shouldn't right. go. You shouldn't be as confident as you're being. No, you're not going to do that.
of course,
as a parent, you're going to go, yes, you're exactly right. You're going to mm-hmm. go out there. You're going to do great. Just do your best, you know, just because, you know, or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, same thing. You have to have that support system. You have to have those people around you that are constantly, you know, reinforcing, you know, why.
Right.
And what your why is and the yeah. impact that you can make.
Have you ever heard the story about Thomas Edison and his school that he went to? When he was a little boy, he went to the school and he was given a note one day and said, take this home to your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Don't read it. Give it to her. So he comes in, he gives his mom this little note from the school, and she reads it, and he says, what does it say, Mommy? And she said, it says that you are too bright for us to teach, for the school to teach you, so that they want me to teach you at home because you're just too bright for the school. So she ended up homeschooling Thomas Edison. And it wasn't until years later when Thomas Edison's mother died, he found that note. And that's not what the note said.
Mm-hmm.
The note said, we can't handle your son in here. So we are expelling him from school. Mm-hmm. First of all, he was too bright for those teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the note was written, we're expelling him because they couldn't handle him. They didn't know how to handle this genius, right? If she had said you were expelled, she didn't do that, though.
We'd all be in the dark right now.
Right. Thank you, Thomas Edison. Think about all the people. You hear these stories. What was it? Who's the basketball player? I'm trying to think of his name right now.
The one that got that didn't make the high school team. Sophomore. Michael Jordan.
Thank you.
Great. Michael. He's the GOAT, by the way. If any of the LeBron James right, fans out there, right. It's Michael Jordan's a GOAT. Don't forget it.
Okay. So what did Michael do? He gets kicked off the basketball
team,
right?
As a sophomore, he didn't make the varsity team. And did he quit? Did he give up? Mm-mm. No. What did he do? He worked harder. Mm-hmm. And his dad was a big influence in his life.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
He was persistent. He drove Michael to achieve better and more heights, and this is what we need to do to get you there.
Right, and I want to encourage anybody listening to this, if you have naysayers in your life, I don't care if they're your mom, your dad, family, even friends, you can't do this, can't do that, shut out the negativity. Don't be mad at them. Just don't be mad. You know, that will hold more negativity in your life to be mad at somebody. The best thing to do is just get up every day and say, okay, well, I'm just going to get over that obstacle and I'm going to build my dream.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen too many people do this. And you can do it. You person out there listening right now, you can do this. I'm telling you, you can do it. And so
you can choose not to believe what you hear that's negative about yourself.
Yes.
Ooh, don't let it, don't let it define who you are. Mm-hmm. Define, you know.
You define you.
You make the decision to define yourself the way you want to be perceived, or the way, you know, actually the opposite,
mm-hmm.
you know, just, okay, you know what? I'm going to prove something to you. Mm-hmm. And you go out and you make that happen.
Mm-hmm. You know, what you want to do is prove it to yourself.
Yep.
Prove it to yourself that you can do this, because we're all given a gift. Every one of us has, when we were born, we got blue eyes, red hair, blonde hair, whatever, but we also got a gift inside of us that was our passion.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that we were going to do in life. Some of us find it and some of us don't. Go on a journey to find that. And, you know, I went through that process one time. It was about, I guess, about 10 years ago. And I thought, am I on track? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And funniest thing, when I went back over my life as just a little girl, you know, and all the things that I did, what was happening was I was being prepared for what I do today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here I am, 10 years old. Helping my dad with his first business. What do I do now? I work with CEOs. And I mean, who would have known that back then at 10, you know, that this is what I would do today? Who would know? I've written a book. I love to write. I've always loved to write. I went back and found all of these little things that I would write. I would write little poems. You know, I did all kinds of stuff when I was a little girl. I think sometimes, you know, it sounds funny, get in touch with your, you know, your little child within, but I do believe there's some value to that,
mm-hmm.
is to go back over your life and realize when you were the happiest. And when you're the happiest, it means that you were doing what you were supposed to be doing, and take that into your adulthood.
Yeah, if you love what you do, you don't have to ever work a day in your life.
That's right. You know? I don't.
and you just got to find out what it is that you want to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if it's not, if you're not finding fulfillment in your work, you know, you have a purpose. Mm-hmm. Maybe the work is just a stepping stone, but it's your purpose to finding fulfillment is really the key. And focus on that And then you go to work every day and you show up fully present and you give 100%, 100% of the time, because that's your obligation as an employee. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's this quiet quitting and all this other nonsense that is permeating through the workplace, but that's not the way it should be. And that's not the right frame of mind.
We need to be happy. Do things that make you happy. And I've always told people, if you are unhappy in your job, then leave. Just go.
Yeah.
There's no reason to stay there, you know. But if you are also looking for a job to make you happy, that's also bad. Mm-hmm. What you want to do is find inside of you what makes you happy and go find that job or create that job. That, you know, you can create that job that mm-hmm. makes you happy and fulfilled.
Yeah. Yes. And even in that job, you know, we tell a story. We use this as an example in with our Crestcom training. I think it was last month, but ownership within a company had changed, and this person who gave more and more time and energy and would put in the extra hours because he wanted to and his team wanted to. Then all of a sudden, new ownership came in. Things changed. His responsibility level drastically changed, and he didn't want to be there anymore. But he still loved the people that he worked with. So to find fulfillment within that organization now that things have changed, he decided to invest himself into the development of somebody else at work and pour into that person and make that person greater than himself.
Mm. That's awesome.
And so that's where he found fulfillment. Mm. It wasn't in the work and it wasn't in the environment anymore, although it used to have been. Mm-hmm. So then he decided to give of himself and then pay it forward, so to speak. We've all heard that term before. And
that's awesome. Yeah. That's what Red really did for me. Red Scott was my guy that poured into me. And I always thought, why did he choose me? Mm. And he told me one day, he said, you just had something. And it was fun to be with you. It was fun to be in the same deal. You know, we had a love-hate relationship because he wanted to build this person, you know, to be a mini him. But I did resist some of the things that he wanted me to do. And, you know, you will have that love-hate relationship with the people that are pouring into you. All right?
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. It will happen. And that's okay. You know, he's passed away. So,
anyway. Yeah. Well, talk a little bit about, so what else? You have the speaker bureau?
Yeah. I have a CEO speakers bureau. We're redoing the website, so you can't find us right now.
Yeah.
You could go to CEO Service Bureau and find me. But, you know, here's the cool thing. Florida's hot, right? Not just Florida temperature
it,
hot,
it is hot.
But it's hot for travel. Everybody wants to come here. They're either moving here or they're coming here. So a few years ago, I realized something. I've hired a lot of speakers over the years, a lot, and I've put on a lot of big events, and my husband has too. So we, you know, we're used to having speakers in our realm.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized was all these people are coming here to Florida, and, you know, we've got Sawgrass Marriott, we've got the Ritz-Carlton up there in Amelia, we've got Omni, you know, we've got all of these cool places where people are coming and setting up their conferences and stuff. And I realize that, you know, what they're doing is then they're going to these speakers bureaus and they're looking for a speaker to fly in here.
Right.
And give them their words of wisdom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jacksonville, North Florida, is filled with people that have wisdom and experience, talent, like you would not believe. And I thought, well, why couldn't we just offer a CEO speakers bureau from up here in North Florida? Of people that, you know, they could bring in and they can drive their golf cart over or drive their car over to Sawgrass Marriott and make a presentation versus flying in all these people, quote unquote, that are experts. Mm-hmm. We have them right here. And we have a lot more, like I said, that are moving in. It's amazing what's happening in North Florida with some really high level experts that have moved here. So, you know, we're building out a CEO speakers bureau, people that have been CEOs, been there, done that, and can tell their stories, like we're doing here today, and then can also mentor. Some of them have areas of expertise. You know, like I said, I have a toy maker. Okay, well, what does that have to do with me? Well, you would be surprised. What he has to do to he creates toys, but then he has to license them, so he knows all about the licensing world. You know, and then I've got developers that have to deal with regulations and stuff like that. And, you know, good leaders. There's just really good leadership kind of people. So the CEO Speakers Bureau new website will be coming up pretty soon. Cool. And I'd love to bring some of them here to your show.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey.
The wealth of wisdom. They have so much wisdom, man.
That's great. No, I appreciate that. I look forward to having him on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll make that happen.
Very good. Very good. Any parting advice or anything else, lessons learned or kind of a closing remark that you want to share? You've gone through some incredible stories and in your background and just kind of you were just being shaped and molded at a young age to do what you're doing. And it's definitely paying off in the lives of a lot of leaders here in Northeast Florida.
No, the only thing I have, I really think that sticks out in my mind is some of these people that I work with have been doing this, you know, a long time, mm-hmm. and they're still doing it. And they're not going to stop. And they're doing it because they have fun. And I so want to encourage people that are listening, make sure that whatever you're doing to make money and to, you know, create a life for yourself involves having an element of fun. And that fun comes from doing what you're passionate about. And what you're passionate about is going back and remembering why you were put on this earth. And, you know, that sounds like a lot of work, but it's not. I promise you, you could go away for one day and figure this out. So I think the world needs more entrepreneurs. I think America, we've got to stop demeaning them, because this is where life is has been fun throughout our whole history. You know, most of our founding fathers were CEOs of businesses. Yep. So we just need more of you out there with an idea, with a vision. I don't care if you have any money. I'll tell you the toy maker story, and I'll have to get him on here, but literally he was making $10 an hour working at Ford Motor Company, and he was paying an attorney $100 an hour to help him with his first toy. So sometimes you got to take a risk. It doesn't work, but you got to take risk. So I would just say this. If you want to make something in life, you have to be a risk taker, but also make sure you have a lot of fun.
That's it. That's it. Have a lot of fun. Enjoy what you do, and you'll never work a day in your life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me be here. It's fun.
You got it. Thanks for coming on. We had fun. All right. Thanks so much, Billy. I'll put all our information or our website in the notes, and you'll be able to follow her. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
As always, thank you for listening and for telling your friends to check out the show and for rating the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Your continued support makes it possible for me to do what I love, which is helping people be the best and become well-rounded leaders in their world. And for that, I am grateful. And until next time, be a well-rounded leader and make an impact.